Our next case for argument, United States v. Abdullahi. Ms. Masters?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. This appeal involves an indictment that parroted the language of 841B1B1 and the government's failure to dispute that this provision covers the drug quantity range of more than 100 grams but less than 1 kilogram of heroin. The questions before the Court today are whether the drug quantity in Ms. Abdullahi's indictment defined the scope of the charge so that the government violated both the Fifth Amendment Indictment Clause and the Due Process Clause when it successfully sought to sentence her based upon drug quantities that exceeded the range in the indictment. Ms. Abdullahi also raised issues regarding the reliability of the evidence used in sentencing and the tail wagging the dog argument. I'm going to be resting on the briefs today on those arguments. We know from the record that as early as the detention hearing, the government believed that it might be able to get an indictment for an offense with a sentence of a minimum of 10 years, maximum of life imprisonment. In other words, an indictment that defined the scope of the charge as a conspiracy involving greater than 1 kilogram of heroin. There's only two possibilities. Either the government attempted to get the indictment and failed for the greater amount, or they simply didn't go to the grand jury seeking that indictment for the greater amount.
Ms. Masters, could I ask you something? Under your theory, if the defendant was indicted under Section 841B1A because the agents had weighed the drugs at slightly under a kilogram, but it was later found that the drugs actually weighed a couple of grams over 1 kilogram, would that violate the defendant's Fifth Amendment right to indictment by grand jury and due process?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to your hypothetical. I can tell you in this particular case, the government knew at the time of the detention hearing that the plea agreement from Cassandra Caillou, which was admitted into the evidence at sentencing and pinned 88 pellets, which is actually in the plea agreement, 697 grams, on my client, that had already been signed by the time of the detention hearing and certainly 2 months before the indictment. So they knew she was above that 1 kilogram. It wasn't, you know, a gram here, a gram.
Why would the jury have cared what the indictment said about the amount?
I'm sorry, would the grand jury care?
Right.
Well, it's up to the grand jury to set forth the scope of the charge.
Why would they care? I mean, you can see how, if you indict someone for one thing and try him for something else, you could say, well, the grand jury never considered whether it wanted to indict him for that. But if it's just a matter of quantity, why would you expect that to affect the grand jury's deliberations?
It's the responsibility of the grand jury to set forth the charge and then...
But realistically, how could it ever make a difference what the quantity was?
It makes an enormous difference to the defendant because...
What difference makes the grand jury? What difference makes the grand jury?
Because the grand
jury... Look, why do we want... We don't like to correct errors when they are absolutely inconsequential. And I can't see what possible prejudice anyone could have suffered from this having specified the wrong quantity in the indictment.
Well, I would point out to the Court that the government doesn't dispute our statutory interpretation of that provision as limiting the drug quantity to 1 kilogram. So it's not harmless error or even plain error to my client because when you look at cases like Resendiz-Ponce, which say the purpose of an indictment is to let the defendant know the elements and the charge which the defendant might defend against.
That's separate. I thought you also were complaining that he didn't, his right to indictment by a grand jury was infringed, which is separate from the notice issue.
Well, I don't believe they are separate. I think they are intertwined.
They are different. Look, you can have a situation where the defendant knows exactly what's happening, but the grand jury is deceived by the charge into indicting, and it wouldn't have if been told what the government was really going to prosecute him for.
Well, but the purpose of the indictment is also to give the...
Yeah, but it's a separate purpose. Notice is separate from this, you know, the screen. The grand jury is a screen, supposedly, to protect the defendant. That's separate from notice.
Well, I would agree with that but would make the point that because it is the grand jury that has to formulate the indictment, I mean, theoretically, we know the government is coming and saying, this is what we want you to indict for. But because it is the grand jury that plays that role, is the government should have to go to the grand jury and say, this is the scope of the charge for which we are going to hold somebody accountable. Because if a grand jury is going to mean anything in terms of being a screen on prosecutorial abuse, which is the purpose of the grand jury, it should in the least mean that...
Yeah, but why can't you have a concept of harmless error with these indictment botches? Why should it be immune from harmless error?
Well, because in this case, and in all cases, if you're going to come in at sentencing and change and go beyond the scope of the indictment, you've rendered the indictment meaningless and you've taken away the authority of the grand jury to act as a screen on prosecutorial...
Yes, look, I know you're saying that, but... Suppose we're confident that it wouldn't have made a difference to the grand jury. Then it's harmless.
I don't know how you can be confident. I mean, we don't get grand jury.
You can use some common sense and say the jury doesn't care what the quantity is. It may care. Yeah, people on the grand jury don't believe in the drug laws, something of that sort. That would be fine. But they're not going to care about the quantity.
Sure, but even under a substantial error test, there's still a problem here because you still end up...
I don't know what a substantial error test is.
I mean, excuse me, the harmless error test with the substantial error qualification of what makes something harmless error, there's still a problem because you still end up with defendants misled as to the conduct for which they are going to be held accountable. And in this case, there's a problem with...
But they never know until sentencing what quantity they're going to be held accountable for.
And I would submit to the court that after we take a look at Resendiz-Ponce and reexamine this court's precedent in light of Resendiz-Ponce, that that's not necessarily the case. That Resendiz-Ponce stands for the proposition that if it is in the indictment, the defendant and the court can look at it in terms of defining the scope of the charge. So it's not just, indictments aren't just about the elements of the offense. They're about putting the defendant on notice about the scope of the charge against which he or she has to defend. And if the scope of the charge is about a certain drug quantity, then the defendant is going to make all of her decisions about how to prosecute her defense based upon what she thinks she is up against. And when the government comes in at sentencing and says, hey, guess what? We have all this extra drug quantity we didn't get the indictment for. We've actually known about it, you know, since the moment of your detention hearing, but we didn't get the indictment.
I thought her former lawyer told her that the government was going to go for 17 kilos.
The government has actually withdrawn that argument. It was not supported by the record, by the testimony, and the government submitted a letter to the court actually withdrawing its reliance on that argument.
Now, does she want to withdraw her guilty plea?
She does not.
She
did. She had asked to withdraw her guilty plea at the trial below. If we do so now, that's not necessarily a relief that's going to help her out.
What does she want?
She wants to be sentenced based on up to 1 kilogram of heroin based upon...
I don't understand. How can she keep the guilty plea and change the sentence? Well, why doesn't it go back to square one?
As she has argued before the district court, she pled guilty to what the government made her aware of, which was 988 grams at her plea hearing, and according to the indictment, an amount less than 1 kilogram. I see I'm into my...
And she pleaded guilty under a mistake of fact induced by the government. Well, why doesn't that void the guilty plea?
Well, Your Honor, I would set forth that it's not a mistake of fact. The government had its own theory. This is how they progressed in the case. They started from the get-go with an indictment of less than 1 kilogram. That was the way they approached the whole case from the beginning. I would submit that it wasn't a mistake. It was just a misleading way for them to proceed in this case, and now they want to claim it was a mistake, but it wasn't, and they should be held accountable.
You want her resentenced, don't you?
Based on an amount less than 1 kilogram, because that was the scope of the indictment and what they set forth at plea, and to what she pled guilty. Yes. So that's why we're not seeking to withdraw the plea.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Masters. Ms. Gurin?
May it please the Court, Hallie Gurin on behalf of the United States. The government would like to start off by saying that the indictment in this case has everything that is constitutionally required. The requirements of the indictment clause is that the elements of the offense here, 21 U.S.C. 841A and 846, are identified in the indictment, and that the indictment gives the defendant notice for the charges against which she's going to be expected to defend.
When an indictment is under a statute addressing more than 100 grams and not under the one addressing more than 1 kilogram, if a defendant really on notice that she may be sentenced for as much as 17 kilograms, I mean, isn't that amount completely out of proportion to the amount in the indictment? And do you think is there any point at which the amount would become problematic?
Your Honor, for the first part of your question, in this case, the amount which was, and I would like to clarify, the range was in excess of 100 grams. It was not limited or capped at 1 kilogram. But what that does do, as you pointed out, is that it caps the statutory maximum for that range at 40 years. And that really is the notice that the defendant is on. She cannot be sentenced to more than 40 years. And that's all that the indictment clause requires, that she what Apprendi requires.
Adding even if it was a 17-kilo case, it's still a 40-year maximum, just a 10-year minimum as opposed to a 5.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. What it does here is the defendant is protected. She's protected under Apprendi and the Fifth and Sixth Amendment, and that her sentence will not exceed 40 years. Of course, Apprendi and Booker has held, and this court has held after Booker, does not apply to mandatory minimums, where the judge still may increase the aggravating factors on a preponderance of the evidence. The other thing I would just like to clarify real quick is that the government is not withdrawing its argument related only to harmless error. With regard to the 17 kilograms, we corrected in our letter the fact that the defense lawyer actually, whether or not the defense lawyer actually said to her 17 kilograms or just discussed the fact that she would be held accountable for an amount of drugs in the ledger.
Well,
and that was the correction.
I thought it was whether or not he articulated to the defendant the 17 kilograms before or after her guilty plea.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
That would make a difference, wouldn't it? I mean, if she knew about it before or if she knew about it afterwards.
It would make a difference only if we get into – well, it potentially could make a difference only if we get into the harmless error area. But it actually, in this case, I do not believe would make a difference because she knew that she would be held accountable. The defense attorney communicated to her that she would be held accountable for the drugs in the drug ledger. And very importantly, in her plea colloquy, the government stated that there was a drug ledger that she maintained, and she admitted to that fact. So she was admitting to the fact that this drug ledger was maintained in heroin trafficking activities. And therefore, she was on notice from the start and, in fact, admitted that she would ultimately be held accountable for the drugs in the drug ledger.
So, in other words, she admitted that the writing in the drug ledger was an accurate record of the drug quantities?
Specifically, at the plea colloquy, the government stated that she maintained a drug ledger for heroin trafficking activities.
Right.
And she said, yes, that's true. After the end of the plea colloquy, she said, are these facts all true? Yes.
But she never... What evidence was introduced to verify that the writings in the drug ledger were accurate records of drug quantities?
There were several factors that were introduced into evidence at sentencing. The first is that her handwriting exemplars were taken and compared, and it was determined that it was her handwriting in the drug ledger and her fingerprints on the drug ledger. And second is that there was a DEA analysis of the drug ledger. And that was also corroborated, I would like to point out. It's not just the DEA analysis of this drug ledger. It was corroborated by her co-conspirator who testified at sentencing and linked some of the names that are listed in the drug ledger to encounters that he had with the defendant bringing and trafficking in heroin, as well as also a plea agreement by a man named Wasim Martins, whose name is also in the drug ledger and who stated, and I was actually incorrect also in my brief, but it is in the appellant has corrected it in the reply, that it was actually 1575 grams of heroin. And then I also wanted to address sort of this idea of harmless error. Judge Posner, you had mentioned during the appellant's argument that there was that even if the grand jury committed error in terms of assessing the quantities, there was no error committed here for the grand jury because the grand jury is not actually supposed to determine the penalties of the case, much like or consider the penalties of the case, much like a trial jury. So in this case, what you have here is quantity, which was on notice to her for statutory maximum purposes only, and although it's considered, you know, sort of interchangeable with elements for Apprendi, is not considered an element of defense for purposes of the indictment clause, and also is not considered a separate crime in any way. Hill, United States v. Hill in the Seventh Circuit, has noted that quantity does not make a separate crime. Here we have a conspiracy charged in the indictment from November 2002 to July 21st, 2003, for which all of these 10 to 30 kilograms, which is the range that the sentencing judge found, were offense conduct, not relevant conduct. And she was on notice of this entire conspiracy.
I'm curious about something here in this case. It looks like this is a pretty stiff sentence that she got, don't you think?
But less than the statutory maximum.
Yeah, it's more than the statutory minimum, too. But 15 years or so she got. And it seems like the driving force here was that she wouldn't turn over on her husband. Was that,
Your Honor,
what's really involved here?
In the record, it does discuss the fact that she kept asking whether, or she asked her attorney several times whether or not the government was willing to offer anything, and the attorney communicated to her that the government was only willing to offer something if there was some cooperation. But I don't know anything beyond that.
If she would turn in her husband, then she would have been treated more.
Presumably there is more people involved in the conspiracy, but I don't know the specifics of that other than what was in the record for the evidentiary hearing.
Well, I sure hope if I ever get in trouble, my wife will stand up for me like she did for her husband.
I have my doubts.
I do, too.
That's why I raised it. Okay, thank you, Ms. Allen.
Throw me under the bus in a minute. Sure.
So... does Ms. Masters have 1 minute?
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to note for the Court that we have also submitted a supplemental letter responding to this issue on the 17 kilograms and commend that to the Court. At the end of the day, this is really not just about whether her sentence is within the sentencing range. It's about the impact of when you incorporate a statute, whether it's appropriate for the government or anybody to just say, we've incorporated the statutory provision. It put her on notice of the 5 to 40 years, but it didn't put her on notice of anything else. Quantity and sentencing are intertwined in that statute, and there's no untangling them. And for those reasons and for the reasons set forth in our brief, we urge that the Court grant the relief we seek of remanding for resentencing based on an amount no greater than 1 kilogram. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Masters. And you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of